No question, Josh Jacobs, good young man, and we of course all know his story. But this is clearly a big mistake. And to talk about this, of course, we have our good friend, and that is criminal defense attorney Michael Troiano. You can check him out at TroianoVegasLaw.com. He of course is a sponsor here of Silver and Black today, and of Raider Nation Radio as well. And Michael, this news broke, and then we saw our good friend and colleague Vinny Bonsignor from the Las Vegas Review Journal tweet out that he had been in contact with the lawyers of Josh Jacobs, who had denied and that there was any blood test that revealed any impairment, and that they were going to plead not guilty. But Michael, when this happens, and you know, we've talked to you about this, and we just talked to you less than a week ago last week about how the police blotter had been slow. Well, we got a hit and it was a Raider. But when you look at this situation with Josh Jacobs, with the facts that we know, clearly, you know, there's things we don't know, but right now what we do know is that the police respond to one vehicle accident near the airport connector. They find Josh Jacobs there. They say he's impaired. They take him to the hospital. Once he's cleared, they then book him. Michael, when this sort of thing happens, what's the process? If they arrest somebody like Josh Jacobs on DUI, what is it that they look for, what they view, before they go ahead and book him at the Clark County Detention Center for DUI?
Sure. That area of the tunnels is really, really bad. I have a lot of cases through the years out of that area. It's just a speed trap. It's dangerous outside of the fact of whether or not someone has alcohol or marijuana in their system. But in a situation like this, I wasn't there, and they had yet to release the body cam. But typically, assuming the officer just showed up on scene and saw the vehicle, he's probably first thing there to do is render assistance to see if the driver is okay. And then at which point, they likely made some sort of observations to lead them to believe that there was some sort of impairment. So whether it was their eyes, they'll typically put in the police report that they had bloodshot, watery eyes, if he had trouble getting out of the vehicle, an unsteady gait. Obviously, that could be counteract with the seriousness of the accident. They could find, you know, in some cases, alcohol or drugs in the vehicle. Again, not saying in this case we don't have those facts, but slurred speech or just admitting that, yeah, I had a couple drinks would be enough to ask the driver to submit the field sobriety test, and at which point they would detain them and either take them straight to jail, or in this situation, it looked like there was some minor injuries that they wanted to address, take him to the hospital, likely get the blood draw then and there, and then book him into custody.
So he was basically, from what it looks like, from everything that Scott read, it looks like he was basically booked for a DUI, but there's no confirmation that he really had a DUI. Is that the understanding, or am I reading that incorrectly?
So the way that it's worded is that you're booked under the suspicion of a DUI, and basically the charges will likely come at a later date once Metro submits his blood results to be tested, and once they determine if there is any alcohol and or any other controlled substances in his system. Then once that is confirmed, that information will be forwarded to the Clark County District Attorney's Office in this case, and then they will review it, and then they will file a criminal complaint with the DUI charge, and then that's when you've formally been charged with this offense.
A criminal defense attorney here in Los Angeles. Also our legal expert in these issues. You can check him out at TroianoVegasLaw.com. And Michael, I know too that the attorney's saying, look, they didn't see any blood test confirming that there was impairment. With a blood test, you know, I think there's a misconception out there that people think that, hey, you get a DUI, you get pulled over, there's a blood test, it comes back like within minutes. When would we know actually that there was a blood alcohol content or something higher than the legal limit in Josh Jacobs' blood?
It really depends. They could put a rush on it if they deem that necessary and important, and possibly get it back within a couple of days. But if there is no rush put on it and they're just kind of thrown in the normal queue, you know, it typically could be a couple months until it's their turn in the lab and that specimen is actually tested.
Wow. So it could, there could be resolution on this. I mean, it could be delayed resolution. We might not know. Is there cases where there's people, because of their public notoriety injury, in this case, a professional athlete like Josh Jacobs, where they might take that into consideration and move it ahead of the line, or does that not how the law works?
Well, it's not really the law. It's at the discretion of the district attorney's office. Mm. So I would imagine it takes nothing more than a phone call or email to say, hey, move this sample up to the front of the line. Sadly, in the last couple of weeks, we've had several very serious DUIs that have led to multiple deaths. And my understanding is that due to the multiple deaths, the publicity and the notoriety of those cases, that those blood tests are going to be expedited so those results can come back. In this particular case, I'm not aware of Mr. Jacobs having any sort of other criminal history, and thankfully nobody was seriously injured in this case. So absent them bumping it up because of the publicity and his celebrity status, I don't see any other legal reason why they would push that blood test to the front of the line. But it's certainly something that they could do if they choose to.
And I don't think a lot of people realize that it really doesn't take a whole lot, and especially if you have some early and then kind of sit on it for a while and let it, I guess, for lack of better words, kind of soak in. It really doesn't take a whole lot to even be impaired, you know, legally in Las Vegas or illegally in Las Vegas.
No, that's right. I mean, a .08 sounds like a lot, and it really isn't, especially when you talk about, you know, people's different height, weights, things right. of that nature. And, you know, I say this from time to time, and I'm pretty serious about it, where I feel that a .08 or above is almost a setup, because it gives you that false sense of security. Like you said, all right, I'll have a drink or two, I hang out, have some food, relax, I think I'm better, but you probably or possibly are still above that legal limit, even though you feel okay. And it's not necessarily about how you feel, especially if they can get that blood draw within 2 hours. I don't care if you are an expert drinker or a complete lightweight. If you get that blood draw within 2 hours and they have that .08 or above, that's what they call a per se under the influence. If they treat everybody equally under the law, whereas if they were to move to a zero tolerance policy, and again, I'm not necessarily advocating for that, but at least we would all be on absolute no distinctions whatsoever, no qualms that any substance would render you a DUI. So it is a false sense of security for a lot of people, thinking it takes a lot to get to that point.
Las Vegas criminal defense attorney Michael Troiano is our guest. We're talking about the Josh Jacobs arrest for alleged drunk driving, or DUI, I should say. We don't know that it was drunk driving. But Michael, one last question for you before we let you go, and that is, there is some Instagram video circulating of Josh Jacobs apparently out last night, if it is indeed last night. It does not show him drinking, but it certainly shows him in a bar area type of thing. Is that sort of evidence that a prosecutor would bring and use in court if it's not really incriminating, or does that really just depend on the case?
It depends on the case. I mean, certainly they could argue, hey, we have a video of him at a bar. I mean, I've had cases like that. It's usually used for more significant cases, such as felonies where somebody's seriously injured and or killed. So the fact that it's out there and that they're aware, even though that this is a non-injury misdemeanor DUI case, it's something that, you know, they'll probably hold on to, or more likely his defense team is already aware of it and is evaluating it. As to whether or not that could go into evidence, if the case was to proceed to trial, then that's different. The judge would have to make a determination if it's relevant, if it's too prejudicial. There's a lot of other ways from a defense standpoint that you may be able to attack that and not have that entered in as evidence against you during the course of the trial.
All right. Well, there you have it. An attorney, a criminal defense attorney's view from the outside of this late breaking news about Josh Jacobs being arrested on suspicion. And it is that suspicion. Remember, we are innocent until proven guilty. And that is Michael Troiano. Michael, thanks again, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
All right, there you go. Michael Troiano getting us up to date. And Q, you're right. You know, as young people, you make mistakes. All I have to say is, you know, thank goodness he wasn't hurt. Thank goodness no one else was hurt, because that is the big thing
right.
when you get behind the wheel. And we talked a lot about this on our last show on New Year's Eve, right, to say, look, there's no excuse to do it anymore. And in this case, with an NFL player, with the financial means that you have, plus the NFL even has a system for players to call if they need a ride somewhere.
Right.
It's disappointing. I mean, again, I'm glad that the young man, because I like him so much, I'm glad that he's okay and everyone else in the world is okay, but also just extremely disappointing, especially coming after a game where the Raiders went out with a win to avoid a losing record.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's kind of a black eye on a better situation that, you know, the Raiders had. And look, this is situations that happen. You know, I mean, people are going to live their lives. People are going to go out there and they're going to make mistakes. It's clearly a mistake that Josh Jacobs made. I think he'll learn from it. And again, just happy that, you know, nobody got hurt or seriously hurt. And hopefully that, you know, whatever shakes out from it does, and he learns moving forward and doesn't make that mistake. But, you know, the biggest thing for me, like you said, is there's so many different means for an NFL player where you can call a number. They literally have a number you can call and say, hey, I've been drinking, I can't drive to the airport, and they'll go pick you up, they'll take your car to your house, no questions asked. And that's something that we as regular people don't have. We don't have that opportunity. NFL players have that within every single organization, every single team in the league. And that is why there's really, for an NFL player, no excuse to get a DUI, because, well, you have all these different options to keep you out of that issue.
Yeah, no question, and we'll see how it all plays out. But obviously, that was breaking news at this hour we wanted to get to first. But Q, we have so much more to talk about on today's show related to football, related to the Raiders completing their season at 8-8. Just a quick preview coming up at 2:30. Hondo Carpenter will join us. We'll talk to him about the season. And we're going to take your calls too. 702-365-9200 is the number for Raider Nation to get on the line. Tell us what you think. What is your opinion? How is your feeling today after the season comes to a conclusion, a disappointing conclusion in my view? Top of the next hour, we're already starting to look forward, folks. Kelly Kreiner, our draft analyst, my former co-host here at silverandblacktoday.com, he'll join us. The Raiders will pick 17th. We'll talk to him about their needs and who might be available and who would be best at that slot, as well as some other general draft information for 2021, which will be a strange draft. Of course, 3:20, as we do every Monday, Hunter Renfrow, the Raiders wide receiver, will be with us. 13 minutes with Hunter Renfrow, to be exact, brought to you by the men and women of the Laborers Local 872. We'll talk to Hunter about the big win in Denver yesterday and about his moving into the offseason and focus for next year. We'll have the Q-tip at 3:40, followed right by, after that, by Sam and Ash, who are with us every Monday as well. And even though we had a legal expert at the beginning, we're going to have one at the end too. So stick with us on that. But Q, the Raiders finished this season 8-8. I did not, towards the end of that game, really think that they were going to pull it out. They come out. Derek Carr leads the fourth quarter drive. They get the 2-point conversion. It was like deja vu again, like last year in Denver, week 17. This time it ends on a positive note. And I got to be honest with you, man. I mean, there's so much we're going to get into over the next several weeks, but I honestly don't. I mean, the season disappointing, absolutely. But how I feel going forward about this team, I'm sort of confused and I really don't know yet.
Well, I mean, that's a, you know, kind of a broad statement, just because you really don't, you know what I mean? Like, you don't, like you said, you really don't know what to expect from this team moving forward. What I'll say is that it was good that they, you know, kept fighting, even though they did everything that they could in their power to lose that game on Sunday against the Broncos. 4 turnovers, 14 penalties. I mean, that's a losing recipe right there. And somehow the Raiders found a way to do it and come out with the victory. And, you know, Derek Carr, Darren Waller, obviously Josh Jacobs, you know, they all, Daniel Carlson, all had basically historic days and, you know, historic seasons for the Raiders, even though they ended up 8-8 for the season. I just think that, as much as, you know, nobody wants to hear it, and John Gruden said it after the game, and I know it ends up sounding like coach speak, and some people are going to think that, you know, oh, Q's falling for banana in the tailpipe. I think it's something to build off of. I think they know where their strengths lie. I think everyone knows where their strengths lie, and I think everyone knows where their weaknesses lie. And I think this is an offseason that nobody, and I know it's not going to happen, but nobody should talk about the quarterback. Everyone should be talking about the defense and how to fix that. That should be the number one priority for Raider Nation and for the Raiders moving forward.
No doubt. And here's Gruden, speaking of after the game, you know, what positives do the Raiders take out of what was just, to me, a horrific back end of the schedule? Here's what Gruden said about those positives.
And then Josh Jacobs going for over 1,000 yards, back-to-back seasons, first time since Marcus Allen. It excites me to hear those names again. And then Derek Carr throwing for over 4,000 yards, first time no one's ever done that in 3 years in a row in Raider history. And our kicker broke Sebastian Janikowski, his all-time record. So there were some positive things that happened this season, and I'm going to enjoy the moment.
Well, there you go. And Q, that's some of the things you're talking about building on. Yeah. But my overall problem, and look, I'm not, you know us on this show, Q, you and I never get too high. We never get too low. But I got to be honest with you, the individual superlatives are great. And yes, Josh Jacobs. Yes, of course, Darren Waller, who's just amazing. And Derek Carr all had wonderful seasons, and they deserve the credit that they should get for putting in those seasons. But you lost again. And to me, towards the end of the year, the offense fell off as well. So it's kind of hard to look at that and say, wow, I feel really good about it, even though they had individually great performances.
Yeah, of course, because individual in the NFL doesn't matter. It's all about teams. It's all about W's and L's. And the Raiders had eight W's and they had eight L's, and that's not good enough. You know, with what they had and with those numbers that John Gruden just talked about, I still believe they should have been a 10-win team. You know, there's two games that stick out in my mind that they absolutely should have won. And then there's other games in the season that they could have won. And, I mean, it's coulda, woulda, shoulda. They should have, but they didn't. And so now they've got to get back to the drawing board. They've got to figure out, look, this defense has got to be the priority. And I thought that defense was somewhat the priority last offseason when they went out and spent free agent money and they went out and got some guys in the draft. But like I said, about halfway through the season, the draft, the 2020 draft class, really didn't shake out the way that a lot of people expected it to be. You didn't really get a lot from them. The 2019 draft class, yeah, they were good, but they weren't as good as they were the rookie year. So, I mean, you know, they still have young guys and they still got to build. But again, the defense has got to be priority number one, numero uno, going into this offseason.
No question. And I think about the Raiders and what the time and the draft capital and the money they spent on defense. And I don't know, Q, if you ever, when you're out in Cali, you're swimming in the ocean and you get that rip current, you know, which can be very. Okay, you don't swim. Okay, so when you're swimming in the ocean, there's this rip current, and you could like literally swim with all your strength, and you won't move, right? Uh-huh. And it's very dangerous. But when you live there, grow up there, you kind of learn how to swim with it so that you don't get taken in by it. But that's what the defense reminded me of: all this time, all this effort, all this money, and they really didn't go anywhere with it. So that's something they're going to have to address in the offseason. We're going out on the Raider Nation hotline right away. Corey in Illinois, you're on with Q and Scott here on Silver and Black today on this Monday.
Man, what's up, guys? What's up, guys? You know, end of the season with a victory, but what you just said, man, pretty, man. It was kind of sloppy against the Broncos with all the turnovers and whatnot. But the only positive note we have is we ended it with a win, 2021. Josh Jacobs, you just broke our heart, man. You just broke our heart after everything we're going through trying to get a team together. Draft you as a locker room man. Innocent until proven guilty, but when you're on Instagram putting videos like that, come on, man. Come on. That's not what we need right now. What are you doing? You got your best buddy, Darren Waller. I'm a 5-year recovering alcoholic myself, man. It ain't going to do nothing for you. You wake up the next day feeling like crap. You got a perfect role model in your locker room that can keep you, that should never allow you. And who let this man leave at 4 o'clock in the morning driving? Who did that? Call me. I'll come from Illinois and pick you up, man. Don't drive. Don't drive.
Yeah, Corey. Corey, listen, hey, man, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And you're right. It's a positive note to end the season. And then with Josh Jacobs and Q mentioned at the top, it's not an excuse, but, you know, you're young, you're 22 years old, you make mistakes. Fortunately, it didn't cost him his life or anyone else their life, but it is a level of maturity. I think that's one of the undercurrents I saw with this team. And aside of the Josh Jacobs DUI, suspicion of DUI arrest, Q, that's one of the things that I saw from these young players, especially that 2019 class, which did so well their rookie year. They still have some maturing to do both on and off the field.
Yeah, they do. But look, I'll say like this, and I understand what, you know, my man was saying on that call and being, you know, upset about Josh Jacobs making a bad decision. But look, he's a 22-year-old dude. I just want to put it in perspective. Everyone go back to being 22 years old and then put a whole lot of money in your pocket. And oh, by the way, just coming off of a good win and you're in the city of Las Vegas, you might absolutely have a couple drinks and get in the car and drive. I think we've all been there, done that in a bad situation and have made a mistake. I think he made a mistake. He's smarter than that. Like I said, we've all talked to him. We know that he's got a good head on his shoulders. One of the reasons why he's in the locker room with the Raiders, he just made a young man's mistake. And luckily, it wasn't a bad one where he didn't hurt anybody and outside of his car and maybe a little bumper or bruise here. Sometimes you just need a wake-up call, you know? Okay, hey, you screwed up. It could have been a lot worse. Learn from it. And I'm sure he will.
Yeah, and I'm sure Josh Jacobs will also, not because he has to, but because he will want to, is he'll want to make right by it too and do something to help to make sure people don't make the same mistake he made again. All right, we're going out to Matt in Hoboken on the Raider Nation Hotline. You're on with Scott and Q here on Silver and Black today.
What's up, guys? Not the ideal way to start the offseason with a potential suspension of Josh Jacobs to start the year next year. So it's not a good way to start. I think my overall analysis of this team, and you alluded to it a few minutes ago, you know, this is a wildly inconsistent team we were this year. Wildly inconsistent. You look at the home record versus the away record. You look at how we could play so well against a good opponent one week and then play so poorly against an inferior opponent the week after. So there's no doubting that this is a wildly inconsistent football team. Now you have to ask yourself, why is the football team inconsistent? What characteristics make up an inconsistent football team? And from my point of view, immaturity. And I think that's the underbelly of this team and this locker room that we don't talk much about. I think we have a lot of maturity issues on this team. I agree with what you said a few minutes ago, especially the young players. The only way you're inconsistent is if you're not mature enough or concentrated enough or focused enough to stay on task, on the ball, and be ready to roll. So I think this team has a pretty significant maturity issue, particularly amongst the young guys, that doesn't get talked about a lot in the media, but I think it seems obvious at this point.
Yeah, and Q, we talked about that too in a different way earlier on in the season, I think too, Matt, which was that we felt that these guys needed some of that veteran, like for example, on the back end of the defense, in the middle of the defense, and up on front. They thought they were getting it with Malik Collins, didn't happen. But to me, Q, that's part of the issue too, is they need to pepper in with all that young talent that they have. They need to pepper in that alpha dog leader veteran who's going to keep these guys, I think, in those individual position rooms in order.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, there's a reason why Jason Witten was in the locker room this year. And I know he didn't do a lot statistically, but he brought a lot to the table. You know, he's one of those guys. And, you know, the Raiders do need somebody like that. They need a guy who can lead the charge and help guys kind of lean in the right direction, you know, and there's reasons why the Raiders went out and drafted certain guys knowing that they were making this move to Vegas. And, you know, I know Scott, as a Las Vegas guy, you don't like to get caught up in the, well, you just go there and party and have a good time and it's wild and crazy there, you know, but for a 21-year-old, 22-year-old with a lot of money in their pocket, I know if I was rich and in Vegas at 22, I'd be wild too. You know what I mean? And so I might need an older dude to say, hey, Q, you know, hey, young blood, settle down a little bit. And so that's what they need. They need a guy that could be there and also be a really good player, an alpha dog. The only problem with Jason Witten is he didn't bring much to the table. If they can get a guy that could bring a lot to the table and be a big, strong veteran presence in the locker room, that is a win-win situation.
Yeah, no doubt. I think it's why you saw less issues on the offense. Not that they don't have some there too, but I think you saw less of it on the offense. And again, Matt, thanks for your call, man. Always great calls from Matt in Hoboken. Okay, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we will be joined by Hondo Carpenter from Sports Illustrated's Raider Maven website. We're going to talk to him about yesterday's game, but also how we should, at least after just a day, we're going to have a lot of time to digest this season and evaluate over the next few weeks. But right now, we'll get his view of the season and how it ended up. You're with Q and Scott here on Silver and Black today, only on Raider Nation Radio.